Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Back here on Fantasy Sports Today, Dan Strafford, Mike Fluitt, Sean Engel behind the glass, and we thank him for each and every Saturday spending some time with us, and we thank you for listening as well. As always, if you want to find us on Twitter, it's at Mike Fluitt, at Dan Strafford, and of course it's at FNTSY Radio. The phone number is 844-843-6879, 844-843-6879. We talked some NBA in hour number one. We turn our attention to spring training. Pitchers and catchers have reported. Many free agents have not. We'll get to that in a little while. We have lots of pending issues in Major League Baseball. We talked a bit about the power of the NBA star. It seems, Mike, that the power of the MLB star is waning a bit here as we head towards 2019. Want to talk a bit about Aaron Nola and Luis Severino's deal. But overall, your take as we head towards spring training, it does feel as though the power paradigm is shifting back in favor of the, well, at least back towards the owners this spring.
So when Marvin Miller put together the MLBPA back in the early to mid-70s, they spent the next 40 years kicking the tail of the owners, steamrolling them without a salary cap, still not going to happen, and getting exceedingly large contracts. And then the sabermetricians really started diving in on numbers for the last, I'd say, call it 20 years. You know, Moneyball made it famous, but Moneyball is, you know, that's an examination of the 2000 and 2001 seasons. So it's a long time, and every team has adopted those types of statisticians, data analytics people, to try to figure out exactly what a player's value is. And I think what you end up seeing with a lot of this stuff is, yes, there are very valuable players in MLB, but a vast majority of the players aren't separated by much. I think that's what a lot of the data tells you. Now, you have outlier players and that have unbelievable seasons like Jake DeGrom, and honestly, one of them is Aaron Nola. And even somebody like him, who finishes third in the Cy Young and is a young asset, signs a deal that is absolutely team-friendly. There's no other way to say it. He got a four-year, $45 million deal. He gave up years of arbitration. He pushed back his free agency by at least 1 year and potentially two by agreeing to a club option. So what he does is he hits the open market now, entering his age 31 season rather than his age 29 season. And as is mentioned by Ken Rosenthal in this Athletic article, it's a big difference based upon how teams continue to recoil at any free agent whose age begins with a three. And Patrick Corbin, to this point, took advantage of the increased preference for under 30 talent by signing a six-year, $140 million free agent contract. Entering his age 29 season, Gerrit Cole will be in a position to follow suit next winter because he'll be a free agent in his 20s. And Yu Darvish's six-year, $126 million deal last year is proof that a free agent starting pitcher can still score big entering his age 31 season, but he was probably an outlier. Is Dallas Keuchel on a team right now, Dan?
He is not.
That's right, and he's 31. So for that guy, for a guy to give up free agency in his 20s, you would think the deal would have to be a lot bigger. And there's always going to be fans, like we just talked about, or people at home saying, be like, what are you talking about? He just made $45 million for playing baseball. That isn't the argument. It's unbelievable. It's for some people, for most people, that's generational wealth that he's going to make.
Right.
$45 million for playing baseball before he's 31. That's unbelievable. Except that that's not the market. He's a bigger talent than that. He's worth more. But baseball is now trying to tell you that, nah, they're really not worth that much. And they're just they're telling you this with Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, too.
Absolutely.
Machado meets with the Padres for a second time.
All the teams.
Nobody thought that was going to be the destinations for either player. And now they've been in on both guys. And Machado twice.
Oh, boy. So we have
all the teams are reporting this week, Dan.
That's
this
my
week.
Point, too. I wonder, does a Harper or Machado just sit out the beginning of the year? Like, is this to the point where we have a free agent who just doesn't sign? Now, holdouts are different in the NFL, obviously, where a star wide receiver or a running back says, anybody, doesn't matter, says, I'm not playing because my contract does not meet my skill set and I need to be paid more to come back. This is where Harper and Machado don't have a contract at all, aren't making money. So I don't know if they make the decision to shut it down, to say, hey, I'm not signing until I get what I want. I don't think they do. I don't think that's how this works. But it's at a point now where at least you have to consider the possibility that they're not signed by the beginning of the actual schedule.
So here's, as you said, there's a lot to digest. So first I'll say that, yes, I think they'll be on teams by April 1. But I don't think it's unreasonable if they wanted to use a tactic to sit out. It's different in football. I know people make the tie into Le'Veon Bell. And I don't know that Le'Veon Bell is going to recoup back the money that he forfeited. I'll say that. I think they overplay their hand a little bit. But it's his negotiation, and I don't really have a problem with Le'Veon. I'm a Steelers fan. I don't have a problem with him sitting out. He didn't get what they wanted. He didn't get what he wanted from the Steelers. The Steelers didn't give him a fair offer. I've gone through this before on air, and we don't have to do it now, but Le'Veon Bell's offer was not fair. It was not market value,
right?
And the Steelers didn't want to commit to him for obviously a variety of reasons. And I understand the Steelers' viewpoint as well. Like, we've paid him a bunch. He's been suspended. He's got an injury history. He's got all these miles on it. The irony is that they put the miles on him from the Steelers' standpoint. Well, yeah, you gave him the ball 400 times. Obviously, he's got a lot of miles. He helped you get to the playoffs. But I digress. And on the football thing, I'm going to get salty in a second because of the AB stuff. But I don't think it's unreasonable for them to sit out because they know that their asset, they as assets, won't decline even if they sit out an entire year unless there's actual collusion. There is a collusion going on in baseball right now, but every owner would be clear of it because they're just sharing data back and forth and saying, these players aren't really worth what we used to pay them. It doesn't have to be an agreement that don't pay any of these free agents. Now, if that's going on, that would actually surprise me. I just think what we're seeing now is enough data showing that paying guys into their late 30s, hey, what's up, Jacoby Ellsbury, is not a good idea at all. The Yankees situation, the day the Yankees signed the Jacoby Ellsbury deal, everybody, including me and every Yankee fan, hated it because they knew he was a declining asset. He was already over 30, and he was a speed-based player. That isn't going to last, and he's been a complete zero for them, which that's the only shocking part of it, is that he didn't ever give them anything from the onset of the contract. He was just always hurt and or not productive. But for those two guys, here's what I wonder, Dan. Could they just go to somebody and say, look, you don't want to give me the long-term deal? Fine. How about $100 million over three? And we'll approach it like that. I'll be a free agent again in 3 years. You want to keep me around? We'll re-up it again. Shorter-term deal, higher dollar amount. That's what I've been wondering. But I don't know if the teams think that's worth it. What if he got hurt? You know, are the teams thinking, what if he got hurt midway through the first season? He tore his Achilles. Then we lose him. Then we end up paying him $67 million for three quarters of a season. And then he's got to come. And then he's got to come back in that third year, recovering from the Achilles injury. I'm just making this up. Obviously,
yep.
He's got to come back in that third year from the Achilles injury. And is he really going to be 100%? Is he just going to rehab himself playing for our team for another $33 million before he leaves to go somewhere else? I mean, that's always the risk, though. I just wonder if that's the tactic that
contract.
The players can play.
Yep.
Yeah, it's your ego that wants to sign the $300 million deal, but they're not handing those out anymore. They're just not doing it.
Well,
Giancarlo Stanton's the last guy to do it.
Absolutely. I think what's intriguing to me, and I haven't – so for those of you who don't follow minor league baseball, there are a couple of different processes here of a player on the 40-man roster with a major league contract versus a minor league contract. And minor league players – are not protected under certain laws in the United States. And this has become an issue. It's become something that's gone through Congress for fair wages, right? That they work a certain amount of hours and they don't get minimum wage per se. And again, the story becomes, well, they're playing baseball. They should just, you know, enjoy it and deal with it. But a lot of minor league players are not making that much, if any money at all, playing minor league baseball. And so it's intriguing, and the tie-in here is to your point, Mike, that for so long, contracts were focused on almost paying the player for what they had done rather than what they may do. And it was very much a thank you. You saw the Yankees do it a lot, and you saw it with Ellsbury, but you saw it with Jeter, you saw it with Bernie Williams, you saw it with Posada, where they signed them to
Pujols.
These bigger contracts. Yeah, exactly right. Where bigger contracts for what they had done. And this is where the analytics have caught up and projections have caught up and war and all of those things to show what a player is worth right now and where they may go next year or the year after that, not what they've done to date. But it's intriguing to see, to your point, the number three in the beginning of an age, Kim Rosenthal's point, they're still not, though, rewarding the younger players earlier. So you're getting this narrower and narrower window for players to make the big money. Because you look at someone like Vlad Guerrero, right? Vlad Guerrero Jr. Or you look at an Eloy Jimenez, or you look at any of the big stars who have come up over the past couple of years, they're held for service time, right? They're held for that extra year of control on their contract. And it's becoming this narrow path to what, the 23 to 27-year-old time frame to really cash in on it. And we're seeing two mega superstars in that age bracket who can't get it done. So this seems like a big signal to me that things are changing, things are going to continue to change. And I point to this in the Luis Severino deal. I think the players are going to start to prepare for a work stoppage in 2021. I think the contracts we're going to see are going to be somewhat front-loaded. We're going to see players trying to agree to deals to get money before that potential work stoppage. And you see it in Severino's deal. You see it a little bit in Nola's deal. But I really think we're going to see 3 to 4 year deals with club options for that year after the CBA is up. And you're going to see a driving force here where some players, and this is completely a phrase that I probably not want to use. I want to use it properly. They're out to get theirs. And for so long, the players' union had been involved in saying, hey, you have to get max dollars like you're talking about with Nola, right? You're going to be the guy who sets the bar for everybody else. But now players are going to start to make those looks. So the New York Post or New York Daily News today had a story of Severino's contract was good for him. It may not be good for all players.
No.
And I think that's
so
the world we're in right now.
Yeah, and here's the point. Again, go to The Athletic and read Ken Rosenthal's article because he breaks this down important. So Nola, by declining to go to salary arbitration, forfeited the chance to push forward the market for starting pitchers who are in arbitration for the first time and have not won a Cy Young Award. That market has remained curiously stagnant over the years, with Dontrell Willis back in 2006, 13 years ago, David Price in 2012, and Shelby Miller, ironically, sharing the record of salary of $4.35 million. Keuchel earned $7.25 million as a first-time eligible, but he had won the Cy Young in 2015. So Nola asked for 6.7, which he was going to blow away the previous record. He was going to position himself to become the pitching version of Mookie Betts, who elevated the standard in arbitration for first-time position players a year ago by winning his case at $10.5 million. While Nola's ask might have been a reach, he was still going to set a new precedent. Even if he had lost at $4.5 million, he was going to set a new precedent. So now, by signing long-term, agents and players can't point to him and say, well, he's making $6 million in 2019. He reset the market for those guys. No, he didn't. He signed a long-term deal, and he did not push forward the arbitration number. Similarly, even in this article, which is just about 24 hours old, it was thought that Severino, now that Nola had signed long-term, could push forward the arbitration numbers. And he didn't even have as good a season as Nola, and he could have pushed it forward. Instead, he also signs long-term. He actually took less money than Nola, but I think he has an extra year of free agency because he signed a four with a one-year club option, and Nola's deal could go an extra year because I think he's got two club options on it. Forgive me if I'm getting that wrong, but I think Severino can come to free agency a year earlier than Nola. Regardless, and by the way, Severino had asked for less. He had asked for 1.45 less than Nola had, so he was like in the 5.2 range or something like that. So there we go. Like this, these guys, to your point, Dan, are just trying to get some money in. I just wonder if Harper and Machado are better served. I've been talking about this for a couple of months. If they're better served, just saying, you know, forget it. I'm not getting the 10-year $300 million. Give me $100 for 3 years, and I'll see you when I'm 29.
Yeah, there was the Bob Nightingale
article. Where he could sign the identical deal, and then you have $200 million in the bank over 6 years.
Yep, and you're getting to the point where you're making the same amount of money. You're betting on yourself a little bit more, right? You're not getting the same security of a 10-year deal that would happen for a Pujols or a Stanton, but you are getting that money. And if you believe yourself to be a high WAR player, a high, you know, talented player, Machado and Harper may come down to that. But you did see the Bob Nightingale article last week, I want to say, or maybe 10 days ago, saying that the San Francisco Giants were readying a very lucrative short-term deal offer to Bryce Harper. Now, of all the ballparks in Major League Baseball that I want Bryce Harper to play in, it is not AT&T Park. That's one. But then Harper came out through, or somebody came out to John Heyman, and I do question some of Heyman's sources from time to time, but saying that Bryce Harper will sign no such contract. So there is a lot to still deal with as pitchers and catchers report, as many free agents are still out there. We'll take a look at the top 50 or so free agents and see where some are still available and what destinations they may go to. We'll do that on the other side of this break. We'll talk some future bets in Major League Baseball and so much more still to come right here on Fantasy Sports Today. Dan Straffer, Mike Blewett, back with more after this on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
One of the better guitar intro and drum intro to a song that I can remember in recent memory. Dan Straffer, Mike Blewett here. Fantasy Sports Today, we're talking Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Some baseball here as pitchers and catchers are reporting. One of the great things now about social media and Twitter specifically for me is you get to see so much more video of the pitchers and catchers, their bullpens. You know, you get to see super slow-mo Max Scherzer warm-ups and tosses. So been fun to have baseball back and have it so readily available via all these beat reporters and fans on social media, something to keep a track of as maybe we do hit a saturation point at some point or another, but still fun to have it back. I'm a huge baseball fan, looking forward to some big drafts this year. Get to finally do tout this year, which I'm really pumped about heading to New York in the middle of March to take a part in that. And there's another, like TGFBI, which Justin Mason, good dude out there on the West Coast, runs. Those drafts will be coming up soon as well. Lots of baseball will be coming
your way
along.
Well, we'll hang out when you're in New York.
Yes, definitely. That sounds like a plan. Going to parlay some work travel in there to make it all work. So it's going to be nice. Visit the home office there in New York. Visit the home office that is Foley's, and then make it all work.
Is that where the draft is, Foley's?
It's not at Foley's. It's somewhere else. I'll say it's somewhere else. But Foley's is the after party. So we will keep you up to date on all those things.
For those of you that don't know Foley's, it's an old school, like famous sports bar, but particularly around baseball. It's the walls are I don't want to say littered,
adorned,
but they're covered by signed baseballs, and it's a baseball themed bar right in Midtown Manhattan. Really not far, actually, from the Fantasy Sports Radio studios. It's just a couple of blocks from there.
As we continue to talk Major League Baseball here, I wanted to take a look at two different stories. And in the final segment of this hour, and don't forget, I should remind you, Weekend Sports Update coming up at 11 a.m. That is Cam Stewart and George Kurtz. They go from 11 to 2 here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You'll want to stay tuned for that. But, Mike, we sort of touched around the periphery of free agency. We talked about Machado. We talked about Harper. Do you have a guess? Do you have a guess where either ends up? Do you have a gut feeling where one signs? I feel like one will sign with Philadelphia. I'm not sure which, but as I said last week,
Bryce.
I feel like the I would agree.
I think it's probably Bryce to like Philly.
Philadelphia is all in with that Real Muto trade, the Segura deal. Like they are looking to win. Their GM has said as much. Their owner has said as much that, you know, whatever moves they're making are pointed towards trying to win this year. And then you have Machado, who's the White Sox? Is that the leader in the clubhouse right now, or do you have a gut feeling?
Like the White Sox and the Padres are like the two teams that he's most linked to at this point. Like if that was really the deal, the 7-year $175 deal, there's other news out there that said that Machado's got multiple offers that are in the $225 range. It's just a game of chicken now. You and I were just talking during the break. It's not really about just Bryce Harper taking a shorter-term deal. It's that Scott Boras is saying, no chance. We're not doing it. And he has a right to do that. Like, Boras has put his guys in tough positions before, but this is one guy that can weather the storm. He's got off-field money. We know he's going to be... Any deal he signs is going to be lucrative. It's just that Boras is not budging from a certain negotiating standpoint. I don't know that he's not going to budge from $300 million, but he's not going to take these shorter-term deals I was talking about. He'd probably be laughing at me or swearing at me for suggesting that. They don't want to do it. I understand it. He's a really unique asset, as is Machado, and the fact that baseball won't pay these guys is unique in its history, especially its last 20 years, 25-year history. It's unique that these guys can't get paid. It's just that they can't agree on a number. And the numbers are obviously pretty far off, Dan, for us to be spring training. Spring training is reporting this week. Everybody's going to be in by Thursday. So, and these guys are unsigned. It's just...
What's going to be great?
It's been so stagnant, the whole market. There's still 90 guys out there.
Right. And what's going to be great is the Harper and Machado watch. So you already have
four full teams of Major League Baseball players.
Well, that's been
four
some of the
full teams.
Some of the best content this winter has been making a roster out of the free agents, right? Like, would this roster compete against some of the best teams? And when you still have Keuchel out there, and I know he's not necessarily an ace who's going to go out and strike out 200 guys, but you have a pitcher at the top of the staff. You have Machado, and you have
lefty.
Harper, exactly. You have enough pieces here to probably compete in a lot of divisions across Major League Baseball. But I did want to touch
Dallas
on
Keuchel
the idea.
Is like it happened in front of our eyes. Dallas Keuchel has become a dinosaur of a pitcher. This guy can't strike anybody out. It's like, all right, he's won a Cy Young 3 years ago. He doesn't suck. He just doesn't strike people out. and like these guys aren't legitimate assets anymore. You're looking at these rankings. I just picked up the ranking that you sent over me, the CBS Sports MLB Free Agent Tracker. This is done by their whole staff at CBS Sports. They rank him as the number 7 free agent. He's unsigned. Yep. Number 1 and number 2 are Bryce and Machado. We understand that there's a number there that we can't agree on. Now, clearly that's the same for Keuchel, but it also feels like the market is just quiet for him because he's 31.
Yep, and Kimbrel. You have Kimbrel at 30, coming off some injuries with the Red Sox. Mike Moustakas is here. He's 30. So they're very intriguing numbers. Gio Gonzalez, 33. So Adam Jones, 33. You're seeing that trend of what Ken Rosenthal was talking about over on The Athletic. And honestly, there's some great articles over there just covering baseball in general. But he does a great job both on Twitter and behind the paywall there for The Athletic with just great content around baseball, of course. But what I find funny, and I mean that, you know, actually funny, not ironic, but funny, is all of the Twitter handles trying to guess where Machado or Harper will sign. So they put out tweets pretty much daily saying breaking news, Harper, and trying to be the first to say it. But I'm going to say that you're going to have like Bryce Watch and Manny Watch, where you're hearing at where they are in Florida or where they are in Arizona. Oh, you know, Harper just showed up in Disney World, which means he's going to sign with the Braves and blah, 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 blah. That's going to be what this comes down to. TMZ.
100%.
TMZ baseball.
And, you know, what's also curious, too, is like Yasmani Grandal is a prime example of how, look, I've been watching baseball my whole life, and I've watched free agency change over the years, and these last 2 years have been extremely unique. But the Yasmani Grandal thing says more about how these owners act than anything else. He had a 4-year, $60 million deal on the table with the Mets. He says no, and then signs for 1 year and $18 million, which leads you to believe that the deal was there, and when he said no, it dried up. Because why would you? Yeah, I get that the Brewers are in a better position than the Mets, but nobody in their right mind as a 30-year-old catcher would sacrifice the $32 million that was, $42 million. Is that right? Yeah, the $42 million that was left on the table. Nobody would do that as a 30-year-old catcher. So that means that the Mets put it out there. He's like, no, I'm going to keep shopping around. And then when he came back to them, they said, no, deal's off the table. Good luck. And he signed it for $18 million. First of all, he's got to fire everybody that advised him to not take that deal because they didn't know the market. At the same time, the market is ever-changing now, right? This is a unique situation. You would have thought that if there's one deal for 4 years, 60 on the table, then there's another deal similar to it that's either a little better or a little worse, not completely worse. Now he's playing on a 1-year prove-it deal. He's a 30-year-old catcher. Why would you bet on yourself then? You shouldn't.
He shouldn't.
You're not in a good negotiating position there. Because now you're going to be a year old. You're going to catch 120 games. You're going to be a 31-year-old catcher in the free agency market with the Mets not giving you that deal.
Yeah, and now the Mets have signed other catchers and are moving forward and have potential to be better, right? So if the Mets are better this year, they don't go out back into the market to try to find a bat to insert into their lineup. The leverage has definitely went away from there. I think the Brewers have the upside, and maybe it's just, hey, I want to go win somewhere. But we talk about maximizing contracts and maximizing our value. That was not the best play there. Some other names
There was a good article, by the way, written about what you just talked about. There's a good article written, I think it was by Buster Olney earlier in this offseason, about what's really undercutting the market in a lot of instances is teams trading undervalued what's the best way to phrase it? Basically trading players that are just and fill in roles and fitting. They swap positions where there's a position of need. So the Mets trade Kevin Plawecki to get somebody back that can be a good stopgap guy for 40 games. And they're trading the back end of their 40-man rosters to fill in needs that each team has because of what it goes back to my point at the top of at the onset of this baseball discussion. Many of the assets are considered to be of similar value. So unless you have these superstars, you don't care if you have I can't think of a name, but maybe like a Kevin Plawecki versus a Francisco Cervelli. Like, you don't really care one way or the other. One guy hits a little better, one guy feels a little better, but their war is about the same. So who cares who plays for who our backup catcher is? Do you know what I mean? Like, teams are just moving assets back and forth, and it doesn't allow the market to play out. Teams are just backfilling with standard assets on the team.
Yeah, and it's the idea of replacement value players. Like, are you getting just the mean average player to fill in on your roster, and or even a somewhat subpar one that doesn't lose you any games, right? Like, and that's the big thing. You look at wins above replacement. You're also on the other side of it, just trying not to lose games, not to have players on your roster who are a net negative comparatively to the high upside guys that you try to piece together. And that the team like the Mets with Nimmo and Conforto, and you hear their Van Wagenen talk about, well, we think we have a good outfield. Where would Harper fit? And I laugh. Well, Bryce Harper would fit wherever the damn well he pleases, because that's how
Trade Lagares. You can trade Lagares if you get Harper. I think you'd be
and
all right.
And let Cespedes sit out. Like, you'll be fine. But I think this free agency will come to a head over the next couple of weeks as teams start to see who they have in, or maybe it won't. And that's the other interesting thing. Do some of these younger players on, we talk a lot, and I know I've done a little bit more cross-sport analysis here on today's show than I typically do, because I like to keep things separate, and I like to not try to compare. But in the NFL, you talk about rookie contracts for quarterbacks, right? That's sort of the MO right now of a successful franchise outside of New England, that you get a core together, you draft a quarterback, and then you maybe add one or two more pieces on high contract values while your quarterback is developing, learning the game, and hopefully you make that jump forward. You look at the Rams, you look at Philadelphia. I know Foles is in there too, but you look at these teams that are doing it. Do these major
Seahawks
league teams...
when they won. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely right. Do these major league teams start to bring up younger players and let service time be damned to try to win now at a cheaper price tag?
I think there is something to be said for this market, as we're talking about Ken Rosenthal, us, anybody, talking about how teams are getting scared away from players that are 30 or older. I think the actual shakeout in reality of that is that we've often talked about the prime of Major League Baseball players being 27 to 31.
Yep.
I do
yep.
think that has shifted downward. I
yes,
think
sir.
Players can develop at a little bit of a quicker rate because, you know, high school baseball is better. They're a little bit better about instructing on the minor league level, even if they don't pay those guys. And I think they are willing to, give guys chances. Baseball has always been a sport where star players could break in young. There's the complication of teams not wanting to, regarding service time and just teams not wanting players to get to free agency when they're too young. But I do think they're willing to take a little bit of a shot. You know, the Chris Bryant example of them leaving him down in the minors when he was clearly the best player, they leave him down there for a month. I think that stuff will continue to happen, but they'll allow them to be a super two. And even if they, bring him to free agency a year earlier, we've shown that the free agency market isn't what it once was. So I think that teams can take a chance on a guy getting to free agency a year earlier just by trying to help them win with a younger asset. Does that make sense? Did I ramble too much?
Yep. No, you did not. But I also think you not specifically in what you said, but maybe the implication I took from it is it is intriguing to see if we get minor leaguers or quad A-ers, as some people will say, the cuspy prospects, guys who are not the top talent, not the Vladimir Guerrero Juniors, not Eloy Jimenez, if they get onto major league rosters to start the year, guys who service time doesn't matter with, right? Like who are those replaceable pieces, the Plawekis of the world. Do we get more of those making major league rosters and get shuttled back and forth to the minor league camp and get moved from the major league roster back and forth sort of internally rather than team swapping assets? Do teams start to do that? I know there's, different implications in different contracts, and there's certain, I'm blanking on the word right now, but number of times you can go back and forth to the minor leagues.
Options.
But I'm options. Thank you. I'm intrigued by that. I'm intrigued. Does Major League Baseball shift to younger players who are not their stars rather than signing some of these Marwin Gonzalez's or guys who are super utility or bench players? Let the younger kids play who aren't your stars. I think it's a story that's going to unfold this spring.
Yeah. Look, man, we're talking about the work stoppages and Rob Manfred will tell you that baseball's never been healthier financially, but we all know that the end of the road for this labor agreement is coming in a couple of years and that it could be really complicated. And their average age of their demographic is going up, which isn't a place you want to be. I said this to as many people that would listen, and many, many baseball fans laughed at me. And this I was saying 8 years ago, that at the end of this decade, the NBA will be a bigger deal than baseball. What do you think? How do you think my prediction looks right now?
Looking quite about right, and we'll talk more on that as the year goes on. Plenty still to get to here on Fantasy Sports Today. Dan Traver, Mike Blewett. We're coming back after this. We're going to talk about some future bets, some team totals, and more right here on Fantasy Sports Today.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
It wasn't until later in life that I was able to tell the difference between Under Pressure and Ice Ice Baby. I'm glad that I've gotten to that point in my life where
I watched Bohemian Rhapsody this week.
How was it? I haven't seen it yet.
It's good. I think those biopics are, they end up sort of all blending together as the same kind of story.
Yeah.
You know, humble beginnings, and then this overwhelming talent made them a superstar. They had drug problems and then cleaned themselves up and pulled themselves back together and had a long career. I mean, Freddie Mercury's story is a bit different in that. And he passed away after that sort of revitalization after Live Aid. But I think I prefer a documentary to a biopic every time because I think you find out the true story. But I think Rami Malek was really good. I think they're just going to hand him the Academy Award because he was really good. Even if the movie is a bit cheesy at times, I think it tells a good enough story. And they actually spanned a longer segment of time with Queen than they do for, say, the Johnny Cash movie or the Ray Charles movie. They span a pretty long period of his life, you know, from the time he met the band to the time it was to right up to Live Aid. So that's a long time. Freddie Mercury died in 1991, and so he died six years after Live Aid, but that was most of his life that you got a chance to see.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to watch it. I'm a big Queen fan, as I think everyone should be. Just great music and a varied musical discography, to use a term from about 25 years ago. But I think that I'll check it out. I know it's on demand now, so maybe I'll check it out over the next coming weeks. And you can, depending on what state you're in, you can wager on the Oscars, too. So that is out there in the world, if you so choose. We've done a pool in our house a couple of times when watching, but maybe expanded coverage this year for me. Check it out over on Twitter. Probably not. I haven't seen enough in the movies. But let's talk a bit more. You made mention in chat, and I do want to bring it up here. It's intriguing to see in free agency, and I don't know if it's simply early bird specials, but you have contracts signed at the beginning of free agency, Patrick Corbin specifically, and Andrew McCutchen, that comparatively to the rest of the field, Mike, they seem to be, you know, making out like bandits. You made a point on Corbin that he's young, a lefty, so the numbers are there maybe to back him up. But Andrew McCutchen cashed in somehow or another this offseason.
Yeah, three-year, $50 million deal. The guy who's getting benched in the playoffs against the Sox. He had 20 homers, on base 368, somewhere in that range. But his slugging percentage is down. He's not the guy he once was, obviously. What was his OPS? 780, something in that range, 790. So it's not like you're writing home about his OPS. He struck out 145 times. So he's just not the player he used to be. But to some extent, it almost surprised me when a couple of months ago, he signed that three-year, $50 million deal. I think his agent read the market pretty well, because A.J. Pollock is a guy who's probably thought to still have more remaining potential than McCutchen to some extent. He got a four-year, $55 million deal, so he took less money, and just going by this list, he was thought to be the fourth best free agent on the market. McCutchen was thought to be a top-10 free agent, so no disrespect to him. I'm just saying that. I think A.J. Pollock is, you know, he's got a wide-ranging injury history, which is hard to deal with, but he signed with the Dodgers for $55 million. Nobody's crying in their beer over it, but it's just not what you would think the fourth-best free agent would get, considering the guy right in front of him, Patrick Corbin, got $140 million.
Right.
Talking lefty starting pitchers versus an outfielder, I get it, but it is a matter of when these deals get signed. Guys, I think some agents knew that this year was going to be like last year, and they said, let's just jump on this deal.
Yep, be aggressive, get out there, and get it done early. I want to touch on some team totals. And
by the way, Grandal's agent didn't do that, and it cost him $40 million.
Exactly right. I think that all ties together, absolutely. Do want to touch on some team totals, some MLB futures, but also do want to touch a little bit here on some fantasy baseball thoughts as drafts are obviously ramping up here towards the end of February into March, and FBC is off and running if you're looking to play in some high stakes stuff. But Mike, we see a trend that I think is going to become a legitimate part of baseball. So the closer, the idea of a single entity in the back end of the bullpen has not been that long in Major League Baseball. You go to, you know, the 70s and into the 80s, where specialization really came on, and you started to have a single person who was called the closer at the back end of the bullpen. He had the makeup, the mental capacity, whatever phrases you want to use, but he was called on to close out games. And the stat can be broken down and complained about, and those who don't want closers in the Hall of Fame, fine. But what we're seeing this year already is a number of teams saying flat out that they're going to play matchups. And now that sometimes shakes out to one guy coming forward, and baseball managers tend to rely on history rather than the near term. But this is going to make for an interesting fantasy baseball slate for those of you playing Roto, 5x5, or whatever category slate, that saves are going to be harder and harder to come by on a legitimate, understood basis. It's intriguing. Someone like Raisiel Iglesias has already been speculated that he's not going to close regularly. He might be in more of a Josh Hader role because the pitching coach from Milwaukee has gone to Cincinnati. St. Louis, you have a number of teams. Miami now could have multiple people closing out games. It's going to make for a change here. Do you see that tide sort of flowing back to where we maybe don't have as many regular closers on teams and just best pitcher pitches in the matchup the manager thinks is best?
Well, look, we saw it in a very high profile way in the 2016 playoffs, right? With the Indians just bringing guys in, and the Cubs bringing guys in too, in a variety of different ways earlier in the games in high leverage situations. I think they wanted certain guys in there, and it was thought at the time, like, well, baseball is going to be managed differently from here on out. And it didn't happen in mass in the 2017 or even in the 2018 season. Now we're seeing stuff like openers. We saw Milwaukee do it in the playoffs. We saw the A's do it consistently. We saw the Rays do it for most of the season, with the exception of Blake Snell. So I do think you'll see more of this. What I've always thought, though, is And I remember one of the hosts on this network said something. He's like, I wouldn't even do starters. I'd just have nine guys out there throwing an inning each, which, considering how hard guys throw now, like, yeah, maybe you could try something like that. But think how many pitchers you would have to go through during a season in order to make that happen. And I think if you start managing, and not to the extreme of that, nine one-inning pitchers, but I think if you start managing the way you're suggesting where we're just going to do matchup-based all the time, I get the sense that you're going to have a 20- or 25-man roster of pitchers available, even if you stash some of them in the minors. And I don't know that it's affordable or practical to do it, because you're not going to pay guys, $1 million to be in AAA. Do you know what I mean? Does that kind of make sense how I painted it? Yeah,
I think so.
I think you'll see it evolve, but I don't know that they can do it exactly the way that they are planning it.
Yep, and I think it also plays into what is now the injury list or injury report for Major League Baseball, formerly known as the disabled list, going back to 15 days. The question there, teams were able to sort of hide pitchers on the 10-day DL. They were able to rotate guys in and out and able to take advantage of that system 15 days.
We knew that was a problem the second it happened. Yep. I remember talking about this exact thing with George Kurtz. It was going to be an issue.
So things to keep a track of. Wanted to touch on that as we go through here. As we do on this show, we talk some wagering, some futures. We'll talk a little bit about the NFL next hour, the futures therein, which teams are, Mike already talked at the beginning of the show, out in Vegas, but which teams have the best odds and who is in line potentially to pick up some players that can really make a change. But in Major League Baseball, team totals and MLB futures overall on potential MVPs and other outcomes. It does seem as though
a whole bunch of stuff right now.
Right, and you have lists from the books out there. I have the list online. Anybody stand out to you? I listen. MLB win totals are pretty tight. They tend to be
so
pretty
sharp.
Accurate and are tough to take advantage of. I will say this: it's the same as NFL wagering for me. I see a lot of open unders potentially, but sweating an under is some of the worst wagering you can do.
It's not fun.
it's just all season long here, or all game long in the NFL or in baseball. It's just not fun at all. Well, anybody stand out to you from a MLB total future bet through the variety?
But to that point, Dan, like, the value is probably with the unders. So don't worry about how fun it is and rooting for teams to win games. I won my over-under competition in the NFL this year picking three unders. I had the Bucks, Raiders, and Lions unders. I had the Titans over, and that was the biggest sweat of them all. They covered by a half a win. So maybe the unders are the way to go. Difficult for me to say who's going to stand out. You know, I suppose if you think the Padres are going to sign one of these guys at 70 – Would you take a chance at 74.5 on the Padres, assuming they get one of the free agents? I don't know if I'd want to do that. Plus, you're not going to get a chance to watch most of those games on the East Coast, so you'd just be checking the Padres box score every night. You want to have a little bit of fun with it and watch some of these games, I would presume. But to your point about these being sharp, like, the Dodgers are 94.5, the Sox are 96.5, the Yankees are 97. So it's a lot. I mean, I know the Yanks and Sox both cleared that easy last year, but, you know, you're still sweating it into the last week for the Yankees.
Right. Right. And I think you're going to have the depending on the line and depending on where you're getting it. I do think that the over on the Mets has potential at 84.5 is the number I'm seeing here. And I would say the number that stood out to me the most, and I get that 90 wins isn't what it used to be because you have so many teams that are on the downside, and whether you'd call it tanking or just not investing in their teams. The Indians at 91.5. I get their pitching staff's going to be really good, but that offense is going to take some hits. They're 1-4, 1-5.
It's so funny you said that, because that was the next team I was going to say. I don't feel great. I have them at 90.5, so whatever number, as Dan said earlier in the show, shop for the best. I like that under.
Yeah. I think that's the right play there. I think that it's, again, Could they go over that number? Absolutely. The pitching staff could all five of them. Bieber could have a huge year. You could have Bauer and Clevinger and the Klubot, Corey Kluber, all having Cy Young type years, throwing Carlos Carrasco. And you have five guys who are all legitimately have upside A stuff, and the Indians have developed them. But this offense is losing pieces, and they have a 1-4. That's okay. But if you look at the projected bottom half of that lineup, it's ugly. And I think they're going to take some hits there in the AL Central. I think that they're going to have a rough go. I think they're an 85-win team, and that's a significant gap between 85 and 90.5 or 91.5.
And here's the free agency tracker to go back to it. Josh Donaldson, former Indian, now with the Braves. Michael Brantley, former Indian, now with Houston. Andrew Miller, former Indian, now with the Cardinals. I know he's hurt a lot. Cody Allen, former Indian, now with the Angels. By the way, they haven't signed any of these free agents. None of them.
Right.
Lonnie Chisenhall went from Cleveland to Pittsburgh. That's the top 50. They lost all of those guys. They brought nobody back in free agency. And yes, they have tremendous young stars like Ramirez and Lindor, but I just don't know that they can weather it. They won exactly 91 last year. So if you're seeing, if Dan's seeing 91 and a half and I'm seeing 90 and a half, I'm glad you said that, because that was actually the first team that I was going to throw out there as I'm looking through it. So I would bet a hard under there. I think that division continues to be a mess, and it's just, you know, the second place team was the Twins last year. They won 78 games, Detroit,
right.
Chicago, and the Royals won 64, 62, and 58 respectively. So, yes, they can get a bump in wins simply by playing against these other bad teams, but that happened last year and they only won 91. I think the Indians are worse this year than last year, and I can't guarantee that those other teams remain quite as bad as they were.
Right, and you have Ramirez coming off a career year, Lindor coming off a great season with the injury. I think there's enough there. What about odds to win the 2019 World Series? I see the Yankees at 11-2, Red Sox 7-1, and Astros at 7-1.
Yeah, so you have them a little better than me. I'm looking at 6-1 on Sox and Stros and 11-2 on the Yanks. So,
okay. Phillies 12-1 where I'm seeing. What about the Padres? Let's get some Padres love. 125
Padres,
to 1.
Yeah. Big number. That ain't
anything
happening.
You like? Any numbers that at least speculation that you'll take a chance on for a big upside play?
Look, with the two, I think you can just take a shot with the Phillies, hoping they sign one of those guys. Doesn't have to be a lot of money. Could throw $50 down at 15-1. That's a pretty good value, I think, assuming that one of those guys goes there. Now, if it doesn't happen, you probably just lit $50 on fire, but you know, that's why you get 15-1 odds. You're taking some chances. I think there's some value there. Atlanta at 12-1, kind of interesting. Do you think they can weather it through the playoffs? Milwaukee at 12-1, too. That's an interesting team. You know, do you think the Dodgers finally get over the hump? They're at 6-1. I wouldn't take a shot on the Dodgers personally, but Milwaukee's kind of interesting to me too at 12-1.
The number I'm seeing here, which I love to see, is the Tampa Bay Rays at 30-1. They're middle of the pack. This is the Rays, and they're in the middle of the pack here from odds, and that's just great to see that they've been able to piece things together. Hopefully they hang on
games
to some of their pieces. Yeah, with the opener. It's here to
with
stay.
The opener, you're and see, Blake Snell.
It's
weird.
The Snell of it.
It's weird. I don't know if I like it, but I do like teams trying different things.
Yeah, you don't have to like it. You just have to accept it.
That's right.
All right, we're going to come back on the other side of this break. Talk some NFL. Kyler Murray, what does he have for the NFL draft? Free agency, what teams need to add, and some future bets there as well. And I'll rail against the Patriots once again, because that's what I do here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dan Traver, Mike Blewett, coming back with more after this.